I can't clap. Well, I'm going to get off the stage.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you very much. We're just going to introduce ourselves, and then we're going to do talk a little bit about... well, you'll hear in a moment. Manchester Aid to Kosovo has no full-time paid staff at all as a charity. It's a very small operation, but I think we do some very interesting things in Kosovo and in the UK as well. My name is Stephen Raw. By some accident, I got voted in to be chair of the charity, and so far I haven't been kicked off. But I'm an artist, and I'll tell you a little bit about the way in which art, and Pam will be talking about the way music has a place in the recovery of Kosovo. And nobody would have predicted 10 years ago what we do now and what we do and how we do it. But you'll hear a little bit more about it now, about the history, after Pam has introduced herself.
Hi, I'm Pam, and my background was really social work, and I worked for 8 years in a rehabilitation centre, employment rehabilitation, and I took a black bin bag full of clothes and food and blankets in 1999, which you may well have done as well, some of you, at the height of the ethnic cleansing campaign in the Balkans, and I basically never left, and I'll tell you a bit more about what I've done since.
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm a teacher, and I run the summer work we do with children in Kosovo each summer, which I will tell you more about later.
Hi, I'm Chloe. I'm a textile artist, and I started as a volunteer at the summer school, and I also help with a textile project working with the women in Kosovo.
So we're going to start by telling you why Manchester Aid to Kosovo? Why did it form? And I think a lot of people here, especially anyone over the age of about 30, will remember the ethnic cleansing program that had really swept through the Balkans, had affected Bosnia, other countries to the north of Kosovo, and basically affected Kosovo in the years, particularly 1988 and 1999. In 1999... it was felt by the international community that the government of Serbia was not going to stop its ethnic cleansing campaign. 90% of the population of Kosovo were ethnic Albanian people. Quite a small minority, as you can tell from that, were Serbian. Hello, Ursula. As a friend from Manchester. And so a very, very small minority were from were Serbs. But under the leadership of Milosevic in Serbia, there was a desire to push out the 90% of the population who were ethnic Albanian. And this was really being undertaken through violence. We got involved as a citywide humanitarian program, collecting humanitarian aid, and the work of Manchester Aid to Kosovo could have stopped after our convoy of 15 Arctics crossed Europe and went to the camps. That sort of work was happening all over the UK, all over Europe. But the difference in our history is that some Kosovars were evacuated to Manchester. And we met someone this morning, which was just so lovely, in the youth session that we did. And her parents were evacuated in 1999, and she's here. She wants to volunteer and come out with us next year. So just absolutely amazing morning we had. So we got very, very involved with the Kosovars who were brought to Manchester. And amongst them, there were five children who had survived the massacre of their family. They were basically in a group of 21 women and children who were forced into a garden, just like our gardens. But this was a different experience, something that's very hard for people in the UK to even imagine. And so that we don't give you an awful lot of very, very serious detail about the political build-up, some of you may know far more about that than we do even, we're going to actually hear the words of two of the children who survived. And Chloe and Naomi are going to actually, for this experience, be Yohona and Lyria.
My name is Liri Bovietsi. I'm 13, and this is my sister Yohona, who is 15. We have two brothers, Fatos, who is 17, and Gens, who is 10. Our cousin Saranda is now 18. We were all medically evacuated to Manchester in 1999.
There were lots of tensions leading up to the war in Kosovo in 1999. It didn't feel safe. Students were told they could only study a Serbian syllabus. There were more and more soldiers around and very few jobs for Albanians, although we were 90% of the population. Serbia wanted the ethnic Albanians out. They thought we didn't belong there and they wanted the land. The massacres started. NATO bombed Serbia on March the 24th, 1999. By this time, there were already lots of Serb soldiers in my town of Podijeva, which is very close to the Serb border. But they increased by hundreds. We all persuaded my dad and uncle to flee. We were sure they would be killed. That was what the Serbs were doing. In fact, many paramilitaries had been armed and sent to cleanse our town. Soon after my dad left, a unit of paramilitaries called the Scorpions turned up at our house. The soldiers made us leave our house. They searched us, shouted at us, and made us put up our hands. We had to take off our scarves and gloves and empty our pockets. I had put some bandages in mine in case we got injured. They marched us in a column along the street and forced us into a secluded garden. They separated my mum from us, and then they made us all march to the police station. Then someone ordered us back to the garden. My mum was with some soldiers and she was crying. She shouted out, "Don't hurt them, they're only children." Then the soldiers shot her. I shouted out, "Mum." They shot us all with Kalashnikovs. We were 16 women and children.
Our friends, the Derichis, all died. We took them in because they had already been evicted from their village. The children were aged 2 to 10. Our mum, our big sister Nora, our two cousins Spen and Spitem, our grandma and our other relatives died. I don't know why they did this. We were just children. We weren't in any army, nor were our dads. Our dad had worked as an electrician at the power station for 20 years. Our mum was a nurse. We pretended we were dead, lying very still. Someone was struggling for breath, gurgling. They fired more shots. I think they thought we were all dead, but we weren't. Yohona, Gens, Fatos, Saranda, and I were still alive, though we were all shot many times. Then there was a radio message, shouting and panic.
Later, a group of other Serbs came, brought blankets and took us in some military vehicles to Pristina Hospital. The hospital was full of Serb soldiers. We were given little care and very little food. The doctors and nurses had noisy parties every night.
A bullet had gone right through my neck and I was sent on my own to a hospital in Belgrade.
I was very scared in the hospital. I kept thinking about my family. Were they all dead? After a few months, everything changed in Kosovo. We heard helicopters and the nurses and doctors were scared. Russian soldiers had a party in the street. Then British soldiers came into the hospital. We were seen by a British army surgeon and he arranged for us to come to Manchester for treatment. Liri was found by the Red Cross in Belgrade. We were all reunited here and started a new life in Manchester.
Last year, we returned to the Balkans. It was very hard, but we wanted to. Two of the paramilitaries who shot our family were arrested. I had been in Belgrade Hospital for 8 months after I was shot. I was with a 13-year-old boy, and one day the Red Cross collected us both. I was stopped at the border when we tried to leave Serbia. The soldier said, "Your dad must be in prison with lots of other Kosovars," but the Red Cross argued that it wasn't true and that he was in England. We got out. After a week, I was flown to Manchester and went straight to Pendlebury Children's Hospital. That was where I met the rest of my family. It was a very happy day, but a very sad day too. I stayed in the hospital for a long time. I couldn't eat through my mouth because I was shot through my neck. I had a tube in my stomach to feed me. The treatment was very kind and very good. They did it well and they made me well again. I went to live with my family with all the Albanians from Kosovo in a reception centre. after a month there, I started school and I made loads of friends. When we were flown here in 1999, I was taken straight to Withington Hospital. I had been shot in my shoulders, my legs and my arms. My arm was very stiff. I have had lots of operations and I am much better. I still have treatment. When I was able to, I went to live in the reception centre too. We felt a lot of love towards us. When I started school, I didn't know any English. We older Kosovo children, seven of us, all went to a small Catholic school. We had very special teachers. They came for us. They were great. They weren't so much like teachers. They were our friends. They had mass every Friday. We didn't have to go. We are Muslims, but we chose to go every Friday. It was interesting, and we liked the music and the prayers and the talk about God, which is the one God we believe in too. I made friends, I learnt the language, and although we were refused asylum, we appealed, and now we know we are allowed to stay. Manchester is our home, but so is Kosovo. I love my country, and I want to help change things for the better and get skills I can use.
Carry on. Last year, we returned to the Balkans. It was very hard, but we wanted to do it. Two of the paramilitaries who shot our family were arrested, but one has now escaped through Vienna to Canada. We went to Belgrade to give evidence. We children are the only witnesses. It was really scary to face the people who killed members of our family and who shot us. We had a lot of help from the British Embassy and many Serbian bodyguards to look after us. We stayed in secure accommodation. We decided to tell the truth and we tried not to be scared. We are the first children to do this and the first Kosovar Albanians. We invited the BBC and the Guardian newspaper to come with us and we decided to speak to press and to the TV for all over the world, including Serbia. We want people to know the truth. We want people to learn from the truth.
We went to Belgrade prison to ID one of the accused and we gave our evidence in court just a few yards from him. I wanted to speak in front of him, his family and his lawyers. I wanted him to hear the words of a small child. Our lawyer is Serbian and she helped us a lot. She is from the Humanitarian Law Centre and she gathered lots of the evidence herself as police were involved in the crime. We went to Kosovo after giving evidence. We were handed over to UN troops in no man's land in the middle of the night. It was so dark. I felt so happy, partly to be safe in Kosovo and partly because we children had been able to do what we wanted to do. Now we are all learning to trust and we realise things are different here.
Then, just a few weeks ago, after years of soldiers telling lies in court about us, one of the paramilitaries told the truth. He turned state's evidence and said exactly what happened. He said the commander started the firing and that's when and the things that we said were true. He said he couldn't live his life. So many children had died. But he was threatened by the paramilitary leaders and now he also needs protection. Also, our cousin Saranda went to Canada to speak to leaders about the soldier who was living freely there. The Simon Winterhall Centre in Toronto is helping us legally now.
We are all getting better. I can use my hand and hold things and I love my school. This year I will go to college. We were very surprised when we were told a few weeks ago that we have all been awarded the first Anne Frank International Award for Moral Courage. Some children in a reading group in the Midlands read about us and nominated us. So next month we will visit the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam for our prize. We are very excited. I am reading the diary and learning a lot. Also, we learnt that Liri, my cousin, Saranda and I all share Anne Frank's birthday of the 12th of June, which is something very special to us.
I would like to say, I think people should come together and there shouldn't be wars and innocent people shouldn't be killed.
Now we are making the Manchester Peace Park in our hometown of Podieva in Kosovo. They have very little there. We chose the name because we want peace and we feel that there's enough love here that we can share.
My families believe this. Don't let people whose only intention is war, because there is another way to live, love another, each other.
So when the children came into our lives in Manchester, one of the most important things we could do at the very beginning was to support them in their path to justice. And that involved giving witness support. So you heard there about their journey to Belgrade, They were very young. I think the youngest was six, actually. But he wasn't able to give evidence. He hadn't really been able to deal with the appearance in court, so we actually arranged for him to go to stay with a few of his family in Kosovo. He came because there was no one else to look after him, but we managed to arrange that. And then the next oldest was eight, so these were really young children, and it was quite a historic case. It was the first case where children have given evidence at any war crimes trial. That didn't happen in Rwanda, for example, but there were no other witnesses, so it was a really difficult thing. We could have worked with lawyers in Manchester who said that they offered chambers and there could have been video evidence, but the court in Belgrade wouldn't accept that. So the family basically said, no, we'll go, because they wanted the truth to be heard and they wanted to stand up. And actually, in Serbia, it was an important domestic war crimes trial, not in The Hague. They wanted to stand up there and actually tell the truth. It had huge ramifications, and I'm just going to try and put these into a few words. You heard one of the paramilitaries turn state's evidence. He obtained a tape. There were 20 copies of a tape of the unit killing people in Srebrenica, when I think 8,000 men and boys were killed, Muslim men and boys were killed in Bosnia in 95. And this tape had been being watched by the unit as a home movie for entertainment. The tapes were out, and the commander, when he heard what the children had done, and that they were strong and that people were listening to their words, put out a call for the tapes, but one hadn't been found. And the soldier who turned state's evidence managed to get hold of this tape. It then went to New York, where their lawyer's ex-husband, who was a film director, worked on it for a year because the quality was really bad, and got it to the state where it could be watched. And it was used by The Hague, and it was also shown on Serbian television. And that became the point where there are many, many people who found it impossible to believe what these military-paid armed units were doing, massacring families and even killing babies, started to realise what had happened in the ethnic cleansing campaign, because there had been complete control of the media. So it's quite overwhelming for us to think that the words of the children went on to affect the paramilitary, who said, I can't just carry on living my life when I've heard that the children have come and what they suffered. And he worked with our lawyers and then affected, really, the course of politics. And as you will know, I'm sure all of you, Milosevic was handed over by the people and died at The Hague. We won't say any more about justice and human rights, but this isn't just about justice for survivors. It's also justice for people with disabilities in Kosovo. It's justice for young people who tend not to be given much responsibility in Kosovo. It's human rights for everyone. So we've started focusing on the war and survival, but our work is very broad, and we're really committed to make the Manchester Peace Park there very inclusive, and I think we're getting there. So next I'm going to pass to Naomi, who actually leads our education work. And at the end, by the way, there'll be loads of opportunity for questions, because we'd love to hear what some of you have been involved in, or perhaps you'd like to know more about any areas.
Okay. So I go out to Kosovo every summer and lead a project with... we take usually about 20 volunteers from the UK, and then we work with probably another 20 or so young leaders in Kosovo, and we run a 2 or 3 week program for children. And the focus of that really is on creativity, on sports. We've done some visits to the schools in Kosovo, and the focus of the education system there is not really on creativity, and they don't really have the resources to be able to teach children as we probably would in the UK. So we try and give those children in that town an experience that is very creative, very different to what they normally enjoy. We also one of our colleagues in MAC, Morel, she noticed when she came out as a volunteer to Kosovo on our summer project that the IT facilities, and in fact most of the facilities in the school, aren't brilliant. So she started a campaign to kind of collect computers, and she actually equipped, I think it was 12 computer rooms in Podjeva, the town that we work in, so that each school had a suite of computers, and that was done over a two-year period. And we kind of continue to look at the schools and to go there, and we've got plans to try and work on inclusion within the schools and try and link up with some of the schools in that town so that we can develop the education work there as well.
Thanks, Naomi. Stephen's going to share a bit about his work as an artist and perhaps tell you a bit more about the Peace Park.
Yes. The Peace Park is a really interesting thing because, as the stories of the two girls we just heard from before, Yohona and Saranda, when those girls were, and Fatosh, when they were in Manchester recovering in the hospital, and that little reference to the local Catholic school that they went to, and the Catholic school was full, and I remember the head teacher, Lou, who said, if we can't take them, you know, what are we about? And they took them as a family, and the teachers just doing that old thing about just looking after them, about taking them to hospital appointments for all their ongoing operations and so on, making sure that they were all right. It's just one of those great things that people do in a very unsung sort of hero sort of way. And that request for, they wanted a park like they had seen in Manchester, back in their hometown of Podjeva. And the municipality there, I don't know how it worked exactly, someone will tell me, but they swung some sort of slightly scrubby bit of land, including a bit of a hillside with some trees on it. And the Eden Project designed the park using this piece of land, and which was a great gift from them, and they've been involved and they've kept their interest, and as the park has grown over 10 years, so it has become a sort of catalyst for a number of different things. The children's work has last week, they've been using the park, and in fact we'll have some slides later on at 7:30 to show you in the leaves tent. So I won't go on too much about it, because you can see what's happening. And there's been some sculpture in the park. There's been artists in Kosovo who have used it. And it's not... the thing I would like to emphasise, and a lot of people I know here will be involved in charities of their own, it's not a one-way street. It's not like us from Manchester going to say in Podjeva, this is what you should do, this is how you should educate people, this is what art you should be doing, this is what we're going to give you. It's very much a collaborative thing. And after all, that is, after all, what recovery is about. And Pam hinted it at the beginning, this isn't what the humanitarian aid right at the beginning with the articulated lorries going with stuff from Manchester to those people who are in need. This is something that is evolving, and we don't know what the next 10 years is going to bring. But in terms of the art, one of the things we did was to make a bit of a splash and get people going. At the centre of the town in Podjeva, there is a square. If you went there, you'd just think, oh, that's a square. There's some planters and things there. But this is where the library was for the town. And in the library were, of course, all the stuff libraries have, but lots and lots of sort of old records and so on. This is what the Serbs burnt down. And so all that's left there is this empty square. And in there, at the side of one of the municipal buildings, we unveiled a big banner, a big peace banner. And lots of people had painted the word peace in any language they wanted to. And there's a poster here. In fact, you have walked on the banner probably as you came in here. It's out here, out there. And this is the reproduction of it. And it says in Albanian, Pace, peace. And every one of these is, there's a little story about someone who has painted in. There's, as Pam said, there's the people who were injured in the war. There's some contributions from people from this thing called Handicos. There is this one down here. Can you just point to the... Yeah. I forgot her name. Natasha, who is in the Belgrade Human Rights Centre. She sent one in, and there was people from Eden and lots of people.
Can I just say that we asked everyone to write one word, peace. But I was kind of thinking about this a lot in the communion service this morning, that wasn't really right for Natasha, who runs the law centre. She said peace through truth and justice.
Yeah. We've also been doing a big ceramic project with someone having a poetry competition. A young man wrote a great little sonnet about peace. And this was made into tiles, and we built a kiln in the park to fire the tiles to do some rubbings, and that was a literature crossover with ceramics and everything else. So there are all these things going on. There's encouraging artists, bringing them over. There's been an exhibition called Fragile State. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about that with a few more slides in the... I dare not try and pronounce it, but I'm going to have to know. The Pechu Kuchu thing in the leaves at 7:30 tonight. Okay. Next.
I think I'll just tell you a bit about music, seeing as that seems appropriate. We love musicians. We've worked really closely with musicians. And the whole thing with Eden started because we were involved with Elbow, and we went down to Eden where they played. And we knew them in 1999. In fact, Guy Garvey from Elbow wanted to go to Kosovo as a volunteer, but his record company wouldn't let him go. And when I phoned trying to blag a track from Elbow, the manager said, talk to Guy, he might be really interested, because he wanted to go out. So he has become one of our greatest supporters. And also we introduced the band to MAG, the Minds Advisory Group, and they also have stayed really involved with them. We have been able to do two albums of Manchester music. So, as I mentioned, 1999, I'm sure a lot of you will know that was an incredible time in Manchester music. And so we got support from not only Elbow, but from Badly Drawn Boy and Dubs and Ian Brown, the Travelling Band, a bit later, who played last night. That they curated our second album, and they're on the table, and you can have them for the incredibly reduced price of £5 today if anyone would like them, because we're lovely and we want you to have one. But we can't quite give them away, but they sold for a lot more than that. And we still would like to take more musicians to Kosovo, because there was very little live music or performance, and part of the recovery was people actually getting together, not just as families, but getting together in bigger groups and actually going out making music. And we took the travelling band to Kosovo, and that was for the 10th anniversary of the war. But we were asked by the children if we would support them in this anniversary, and they said it gets harder, not easier. And we said, how's about this? We'll still respect the loss and the tragedy and the sadness that the people in your community will feel, but shall we focus on life and not death? Shall we focus on beauty and creativity? And the whole town got behind the fact that we brought art and music, and we were told afterwards that it was the only sort of Remembrance Day that had been experienced in the Balkans which had actually uplifted the town. We prayed with Muslims. Stephen and I are Christians, and we stood on a stage and the local imam prayed with us. And I think it was good. It just felt good. It felt as if we were strengthening people and we became stronger. And I think at that point, I'd like to bring Chloe in, because our strength is the strength of volunteers. We're all volunteers. And we met people this morning. I'm looking at you because you said something really encouraging to us, and I'm just looking at you thinking, I wonder if one day you'll volunteer to come out to Kosovo. We just love it. We've just come back from doing children's work, and half the team are from the UK, half are in Kosovo, and there are usually about 40 of us working with 500 children.
And so if anyone's interested in volunteering, speak to us. We're all volunteers. No one gets paid. We just do what we can. But Chloe has been an incredible gift to us, and she's gone on from being a volunteer to leading various projects. So Chloe, would you tell us what you do?
So we work with women in Kosovo that have been selected by an organisation called Women for Women for being disadvantaged. And we help train them in textiles and embroidery to make products that we sell in the UK. But something to definitely say that Stephen mentioned, that it's not that we go in and tell them what to do. It's definitely a two-way process. We're also working with a young Kosovan leader to help run the project. So, yeah, it's going really well. We'll see how it develops.
Chloe's also an amazing summer club leader. Some of you might think, how can art really help bring about peace and build bridges? I think I felt that at the beginning. I never imagined we'd be doing all these creative projects. But I thought I'd just read you a few quotes from an exhibition that these children, if you can imagine the children whose words they're reading, they're now young adults. They've all trained as artists. One did interactive arts and two did graphics. Very artistic family. And they decided that to tell their story as adults, they would actually use art. So they did an exhibition called Bugyetsi Family History, and they took it first to Pristina, the capital of Kosovo, then it went to Tirana. In both those national galleries, it had record figures of attendance. And then, after a lot of very difficult negotiation, it went to Belgrade, to a state gallery. That was really difficult because the police had to be involved outside and there were demonstrations. And we really felt, those of us back in England, for the children being out there in the middle of conflict and anger. It was the last thing we wanted. But lots of people went to the exhibition, which was in a state-owned cultural centre. And at the end of the exhibition, the staff of the gallery sent a report, which was of the visitor's book. And they had very kindly translated a lot of the comments. And so I just, what we'd like to end our contribution, but we'd love to answer any questions or hear what you've been doing. Just like to read you a few of these, especially to perhaps someone not from an art background who's thinking, what can art achieve in terms of peace? So these are all words that I presume are written by Serb people. No words, only pain and shame. I think that each nation should recognise and confront its own crimes and individuals who did it on Serbia's behalf. As a Serb, I am very glad that this crime is presented in Belgrade. Serbia won't move forward whilst at least 80% of its inhabitants come and see this exhibition. This is what Serbia needs, because of us and our children, to understand. Another one. Horrible. What lies within man? But you cannot kill life. From silence, the voice will emerge. And another one. Your tears, their tears, our tears. In grief, we are all united in reaching out to each other humans to create peace. Another one. Sorry, 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 sorry. Horror, horror, misery, war, deranged minds. I think there are about 300 comments. I'm just going to read you maybe one more. My children. Someone just wrote, my children. So that obviously was a wonderful thing for the children and for us to see, because it meant that this creative work was actually creating a bridge of love and a bridge of reconciliation and a bridge of understanding. And if anybody here is involved in art, I hope that you find that encouraging, that maybe you would use your art in a post-war situation. We'd also love to talk to anybody that's interested in bringing new skills, or if it's touched any of your hearts about being involved, we'd love to hear from you. But I think Stephen's going to perhaps invite questions.
I am. Before I forget, perhaps we've mentioned stuff on the table down here. There's this poster, this Pace piece, which says Peace, Pace and Shalom at the bottom here. And there's also a poster of the ceramic project. Thank you very much, Claire. Beautifully done. The ceramic project here with the Peace sonnet. And the CDs, of course, there. We're asking for a donation for the posters. The CDs are £5. But we'd also, as Pam said, we'd like to hear about anybody else with any experience of that part of the world, and or the idea about recovery, about this situation that we're in. Do I give you this?
And just, oh, hello. Just to say, I'm sorry, we don't have a roving mic in here, so if you want to ask a question, I'm afraid you'll have to come up. We were getting people to shout and we'd repeat it, but I don't think we'll hear you if you do that. You're going to have to come to the mic, I'm sorry.
I just talk this way, is that all right? Okay, yes. Yeah, sorry. Yes, I think this fits in very well with one of the main themes of this green book about forgiveness. This fits in very well with one of the main themes of this green belt about forgiveness. Desmond Tutu's daughter has been talking about at the beginning, and she was saying that these situations, there's never one party that is absolutely right and the other one absolutely wrong. And I think that is very much the case in the Balkans. I wouldn't want anybody to go away today thinking that the Kosovans were absolutely right and the Serbians were absolutely wrong. You've heard already that the Serbians are forgiving. I hope there is some forgiving the other way around as well. Certainly, some of the people in Kosovo were not saints. We must never forget that. The people at the Kosovan Liberation Army were not saints. We must remember with forgiveness that it has to be both ways.
Do you want to say something?
Can you pass that one?
I think that a lot of things that were said this morning really touch me. I particularly noticed the reference to forgiveness can only come whilst the scars have been exposed in the light. And in places like South Africa, that happened through the Justice and Reconciliation Commission. And in Rwanda now, there was no such process in Kosovo. I sometimes wonder how it would have been if that had been possible. But I think the problem that I have noticed was a lack of contact in those countries. You still had perhaps some kind of proximity where people were in contact with people who'd carried out atrocities and violence, whereas in Kosovo after the war, most people had either withdrawn over the country, over the border to Serbia, or they might have migrated somewhere like America. And we work in a mono-ethnic community, so there are really limited opportunities for contact. We've tried to do a few things, like we introduced some of our young people to a youth theatre, a Serb youth theatre, living in a small enclave, still in Kosovo. And there were Serbs living in guarded communities, often farming communities, where the people felt they just didn't want to give up the farms and the land that they'd farmed. And maybe these people were innocent. It's hard to know, isn't it? I'm sure many of them did not participate in ethnic cleansing, but that was a huge step for our young Kosovo friends to go into the enclave and meet Serbs. And there needs to be far more contact, ideally some kind of contact in schools, because the schools are all really teaching separately. And I think that's a very well-made point that I would argue that politically the ethnic cleansing program was driven by Milosevic, and that, yes, the KLA formed as an attempt to respond to his policies. And I do think that, history will probably show that there are strong parallels between Milosevic and the work of the Nazis and Hitler. That would be my position. But, you know, let's see how history reveals the past. You'll need the mic.
Do we want to say anything else?
Probably stand back here.
It's just a comment, first of all. I was here in this very tent yesterday afternoon hearing about the festival in Bethlehem. They had the second one this summer, and it was Star Street. All the shops have been closed for 10 years, but this was an excuse to get the shops to open up. It sounded very similar to the square in Potiovo, if you're getting a bit more life back in, and it was encouraging, bringing life back in. But just a simple question at the end is, you started at the beginning by saying it was 90% Albanian, 10% Serb, in Kosovo, for the atrocities. What is the percentages now? I mean, how many of the Albanian Kosovans were killed, and did that alter the balance?
Because a lot of Serbs actually left, some were actually forced back into Serbia, and some left because they chose to. The population now, I think, is still about 90% ethnic Albanian and about 6% Serbs. And there are other groups like Roma and Egyptian and a few other minorities, Ashkali, but it hasn't changed dramatically.
I actually asked if I could go to the youth thing, because this doesn't mention Kosovo in the short thing. But I've been out a couple of times as a volunteer nurse with a different project. But one of the really challenging things is going as a Christian. I'm a hospice nurse here, so I was doing hospice nursing there. Is going as a Christian to the home where somebody's dying, where their husband and their two children have been killed in the name of Christ, and after they burnt the house down, they put a cross on the door. And it taught me, talk about forgiveness, they had me through the door, and they had the organisation through the door. And just, I've seen incredible forgiveness of Muslim sins, of Christian sins from Muslims there. And an incredible, I mean, that people would, I found it really moving. Kosovo is part of Europe. You buy things in euros. It's the same currency, the same cost, but there's still 60%+ unemployment. Lots of what I'd call very genteel poverty, but real strong hospitality. And I've no idea about Mac, but it's in some ways much more easy to volunteer there than other places I have, because you don't look different. You know, you go to Africa and you just stand out like a sore thumb, whereas you don't in Kosovo. You've got things that you can build on that are common in culture as well as the differences, which somehow really help. So it's just a plug. Have a go. Thank
you. Can I just say something about the you're saying about the Muslims and the Christians? The tape that they found, this incriminating DVD of the Scorpion death squads, the beginning of it, I haven't seen this tape, but I've heard that the beginning of it, there's an Orthodox priest blessing the Scorpion members before they go off and get into their utility vehicle, drive 20 miles away to do a morning's work, which is, it's so utterly mundane. Whenever people, you know, get into violence in that way, there's, you know, humanity is going out the other door. So, and you're right, you know, the Kosovo Liberation Army, men of violence, of course, you know, get involved in all that sort of thing. But thank you. You're dead right. I don't know. I can't remember how I volunteered. Pam saw a bit of a sculpture of mine in a South Manchester art show, and she said, "Do you know, we've got this Manchester Peace Park in Kosovo." I didn't know where it was. Kosovo, that is. And, you know, and we're looking for some sort of textual work or something in this peace park. And the next thing I find out, I'm on a plane and I'm going there. I don't know if you want to say anything about that, about the Christians or
something. The situation with the church is quite interesting. I think that maybe we'll just make reference to that because there are people involved in evangelism in Kosovo, and there are also people, very extreme Islamist groups. When I was over there 2 weeks ago, I walked past a court right in the city centre, which seemed to be guarded by the equivalent of the SAS. I think they had just picked up about 40 people who had been fighting in Syria. So it's that some of those issues exist here, but it's a complex society. There are, as I mentioned, Catholics. There are some beautiful Catholic churches in Kosovo. In fact, I first saw the Stations of the Cross in the Catholic Church about 12 years ago, and they'd been carved by a Muslim, and it really touched me, and they were beautiful, and I started to think maybe we can work with artists. There are American evangelists in Kosovo, and they often run English courses, and it's a little bit difficult because we sometimes feel people go along for English courses and there's actually a lot more on the agenda. So we are aware that there needs to be far more bridges, there needs to be more forgiveness, and step by step, because this really needs to be led by ethnic Albanians and Serbs and not by British people. Step by step, hopefully, we're supporting that. And it would be wonderful if these bridges could be crossed and if communities could be brought together. I guess if that happens, you know, we actually would like there to be no need for Manchester Aid to Kosovo, but it's very messy at the moment. It's very messy politically. As the gentleman down there, I think, appreciates, post-war, it's very complex, and you have a lot of power struggles. The KLA, that's the Kosovo Liberation Army, which was a very mixed group of people, from intellectuals and wonderful teachers through to really rough gangstery type men, all fighting together for their country with very little probably training by the state. The party which morphed out of that group thinks that they should remain in control of Kosovo. And then you've got other groups forming coalitions and, you know, trying to actually go down a different path. And at heart, everybody wants peace. But I'm sure those of you that have maybe experience of other countries know that the first 15, 20, 30 years is very difficult. But I, for one, am glad that we're in there. And if anybody wants to be in there with us, come and talk to us afterwards, because we found everyone has skills that they can share. And if anyone's interested, just come up and we'll tell you far more after this session.
Are there any other burning questions? Otherwise, we might wrap this up and let you get to the CD purchasing stage of the thing. Just a really quick question for me. Do you have to be in Manchester to join Manchester Action Aid to Kosovo? Okay,
no,
just
no, a clarification. No, thank you. Very good question. Absolutely. Our volunteers come from all over the UK. Absolutely. Then people gravitate towards Manchester for other reasons.
In which case, can I thank you very, very much for coming and talking to us here at the table in Greenbelt? It's been great.